Welcome to Fontanelle, a paediatric educational podcast. This is the first in a series of podcasts for parents, and today we're covering constipation, one of the most common reasons children get brought to see their doctor. My name's Caroline Story, and I'm talking today to Dr. Mark Tai, who's a paediatric consultant in Poole with a special interest in gastroenterology, and he sees hundreds of patients with constipation. Mark will be telling us what constipation is like, why it happens, and what we can do about it. Mark will also talk about what will happen if you take your child to see a doctor about their constipation, what tests he might ask for, as well as what little steps you and your child can take even before you think about starting any medication. We will also go through the medication, which is entirely safe. You'll be glad to hear that Mark is optimistic that in the majority of cases, you don't need to suffer and the constipation will get better. If you're a doctor and you see children with constipation, please feel free to share this podcast with the parents. So I'm here with Dr. Mark Tai in Poole Hospital in the Children's Department, and today we're going to be talking about constipation from the point of view of a parent who may have a child who's constipated.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to help parents become familiar with this, because although it seems a mountain to climb, it's actually by addressing the little steps and thinking about the triggers and helping the child to become more comfortable with opening their bowels is going to be key to managing this.
That's brilliant. And I guess it can present in lots of different ways, can't it?
Yes, absolutely. So in terms of the typical signs and symptoms, infrequent foul-smelling stools, in theory less than three a week. They can also be passing occasional enormous stools or frequent small pellets, what we joke to our patients as rabbit dropping stools. But one of the patterns that we do sometimes see in our children, is particularly our toddlers, is where they sort of run behind the sofa, they cross their legs and go quite red in the face, and parents think that that's straining. But often that can be withholding, so children who are desperate to keep poo in so that they can carry on playing, for example, so that they just don't have to go through the process of being changed and cleaned. Other things that we see is that children can soil intermittently, or, you know, where a small amount of poo sneaks into the pants, or even have quite large amounts that can be quite liquid, quite offensive smelling. The clue that it's overflow actually is the more offensive the smell, actually, generally, the longer the poo has been inside you. So that helps you differentiate between that and diarrhea.
Wow, and overflow, by overflow, just to clarify, you're meaning that there's a big lump of constipated poo and it's going round
yes,
it.
It's a little big rock of kind of constipated poo in still inside the rectum, and there's just loose stool flowing around the outside. They often complain of abdominal pain and often have a slightly swollen stomach. Their appetite isn't great, they can be miserable in themselves, and just quite tired and lethargic and not want to do very much. And it is very common, you know, some of our studies suggest that it can affect anywhere between 5 to 30% of children, and it's about a quarter of the workload that I see.
So actually, parents might not realise that the child's constipated, but they might just think, why has my child got tummy ache or got any of these various things that you've just described?
Yes.
And all of them could point to this diagnosis.
Yeah, and those are the kind of questions that we'll ask parents. You know, sometimes it can be difficult to go to your doctor, actually, with problems with this, because it's a bit embarrassing. Let's be honest, it's poo. You know, it's still something that if your child's having difficulty with that, there can be some simple things that be put in place that aren't too, you know, uncomfortable or distressing for the child. And so deserves helping.
Mm. If you're constipated, are you likely to be always constipated, or can something set it off?
Yes, so there are some families where constipation runs in the family, so there's a genetic tendency sometimes. And that's quite useful for the child to hear, because then they realise that it's, you know, it's not their fault and it's something that other people have that they have that they're familiar with. But there are some triggers, such as, for example, a sudden change in diet. So weaning can sometimes do it, or medicines can do it. For example, the thickener Gaviscon in babies, or iron supplements in older children. Other things include if the child passes a large stool that is surprising and painful, they can then start a stool withholding cycle after that. Mm-hmm. Other things include an illness where they've had fever or dehydration. If their diet's not great in terms of fibre intake, so white bread, starchy foods, white pasta that isn't whole wheel pasta, a cereal that doesn't have fibre in for breakfast, for example, or if they're not drinking enough. Generally, preschool children should be having about a litre of fluid a day. School-aged children, probably about a litre and a half. And your teenagers, probably similar to adults, really, about 2 litres of fluid a day. Sometimes psychological issues can be part of the mix. So some children can be afraid of using the toilet or don't really know what the toilet is for. And so having a toilet training that promotes a fun, slightly jokey approach to using the toilet with some rewards helps children significantly. A more punitive or a telling off approach to toilet training can often promote children who are afraid to poo and then promote a sort of stool withholding cycle. Other things can include, you know, the school toilet. You know, some children are afraid of the school toilet and they're, you know, and it being a bit, you know, a bit smelly in there, or the lock's not working well, and so they hold on to poo so they don't have to poo at school, and therefore, you know, that's about 7 hours a day, so that can promote constipation. And just letting them know that there is a clean and separate toilet available in school is useful, and also making sure that there's access to a clean toilet at home that's working. Some families in shared accommodation may not have access to their own toilet and may be using a communal toilet as well.
Okay, so if I'm a mum and I'm bringing my child to the doctor because they're constipated, what will the doctor do?
So generally the doctor should welcome you, find out your child's condition, you know, the condition that led to the constipation, whether there were any factors like we've talked about that set this constipation cycle in progress, because that's going to be really important to address in order to be able to help the child improve and get off medications and continue to have a normal stooling pattern. The doctor will also chat to you about the birth and about, you know, how the child, you know, pooed around the time of birth, and we'll make sure that the child is growing well, examine their tummy, you know, to see how much, you know, poo is there. On palpation or feeling of the tummy, you can sometimes feel a solid mass on the left side of the abdomen and the lower part. If the child's complaining of soreness around the bottom, then they'll probably have a look, but not necessarily do a rectal examination, which often children are quite scared about, and also look at the spine and lower limb reflexes.
Mm. And are there any features that would worry a doctor about constipation that maybe parents might also worry about?
The vast majority of constipation, so 95% of the patients that we see, just have constipation without an underlying significant cause, although parents worry about blockage or an underlying, a significant underlying disease. The things that we look for are to ask parents about when their child was a baby, did they pass the black tarry poo meconium within 48 hours of life, or did they have constipation in the first few weeks? And though the children that didn't have problems with that, which is the vast majority of children, are very likely to have a normal anatomy because it was normal in the first few weeks of life, so it won't have changed. We worry a little bit more about those children who aren't growing and thriving, worry about those children who vomit, particularly if it's green, and worry about those children with blood or mucus mixed in with the stool. It's not necessarily a large poo with a little bit of blood around the outside, because that may just be sort of trauma related to that poo coming out, but blood and mucus mixed in with the poo, which might indicate some inflammation of the bowel. And also those children who are walking slightly stooped over as they grow, or with a new onset lower limb weakness. We look at the spine and we do lower limb reflexes.
If that spine exam's normal,
if those are normal, then a scan's probably not needed. But if there's a problem with that, then we definitely would proceed to a scan.
Fine, okay. Would they do any tests routinely?
Or? It depends. If there were any worrying symptoms or signs, then what we call red flag symptoms, then we'd definitely do further testing. Generally, as a routine, patients would have a set of blood tests to make sure that they haven't got, for example, celiac disease or underlying inflammation. If there's particular concerns about growth, a thyroid function may be useful. And if there's a particular pointer, for example, family history of cow's milk protein allergy, then some food allergy testing may also be appropriate. And if there's blood in the stool, a fecal test looking for a marker of inflammation in the poo called calprotectin may also be useful. The only other test that we sometimes talk to parents about is the sweet corn test. So if a child has sweet corn on day one, how long does it take to come out in the poo? And that can help you understand how good the bowel is at pushing things through. If it's more than 5 days, what we can do is a bowel transit study where we give children small little shapes, like plastic shapes that we mix up in yogurt, for example, and we give them on day one, and then we do an x-ray on day five to see where the shapes have got to. If they are scattered all the way through the bowel, then you know our child may have what's called delayed bowel transit, which may mean that actually they're on laxatives for quite a long period of time, often years. But if the shapes are all congregated in the rectum or back passage, it means that the child is holding on to poo quite significantly, and the shapes are all there ready to be passed when the child is happy and able to.
And so that study is something you do in hospital?
So the x-ray study, yeah, it's something that we do in hospital, but the sweet corn study is something that...
Okay, what would you say in your clinic would be some simple things that they could do to help?
We chatted a little bit about fluid and making sure the child's having enough fluid, making sure that the child's having a good diet, that's, you know, encouraging vegetables, for example, green vegetables, which is easier said than done in children. But even if they are reluctant to have vegetables but will have fruit, that's generally good enough. But if you can encourage at least 5 portions of fruit and veg a day. The other thing would be that positive approach to toileting. Make sure there's time for toileting as well, so that the child, you know, is encouraged to go to the toilet after breakfast, lunch and dinner for 5 minutes at least. We do watch out for our younger children with short attention span. We call them toilet ninjas, where they're in and out really quickly. But trying to make sure that those children with short attention spans, you know to stay there for the whole 5 minutes. And a thing like a simple clock or a timer may often help them.
Can they play a game while they're on there? Or do you...
Yeah, so they can play a game on there. You know, if they want access to a phone or a tablet, then that's fine. Particularly if you've got a child who's quite anxious. If you want a child who wants to do something a little bit more active, they can often blow raspberries on their arm or blow out a balloon while sat on the toilet, or blow bubbles. But just that fun, engaged approach with this active support of you as mum and dad would be absolutely key in helping them.
And then what about medical treatments? If they've tried that, what else can a doctor provide?
So the medications that we can use are very simple. They they divide down in basically medicines to soften the poo and medicines to stimulate the bowel to push out poo. So the medicines to soften poo, the first medication most commonly used is Movicol. It comes as a powder that you can mix in with water, but you can flavour it with squash or juice or whatever it takes to get the child to take it. The other thing that you can use in little babies is lactulose, which is a complex sugar. It's quite sweet tasting, but in older children can cause a little bit of gas and wind. Mm. In terms of stimulants, particularly if children have a problem with overflow, Movicol can make that overflow a little bit worse before it gets better. So some children do benefit from a stimulant such as Senna or bisacodyl or picosulfate. Those medications all cause the bowel to push poo out a little bit more, and so when you're starting the stimulants off, it can cause some cramping tummy pain as the bowel gets going, but it's important to kind of see that through. You can use paracetamol to help minimize the impact, and if you give it in the evening, generally children who sleep well can fall asleep and the stimulant takes effect and the child can wake up next morning and sit on the toilet and do what they need to do. If the stimulants are more than the child can manage, often then you can think about softeners. I think the aim is, you know, with constipation, you can often get the back passage being slightly stretched, and so, you know, encouraging the bowel to open regularly with medications is really important. It's really important not to stop the medications too quickly because you can go backwards. So even if you've cleared the initial backlog, the bowel is still stretched and needs time to recover. I tend to use for mums the analogy of pelvic floor and how long that tends to recover after childbirth, and that helps.
So they've got to sort of tone it up again.
Tone it up again with medications.
How long would that normally take?
So with many children, they are looking at being on medicines as long as you haven't got a very transient difficulty. They are looking at being on medications for kind of 3 to 6 months. About 10% of our patients are on medications for years, and we know that the medications are safe. The other thing that parents sometimes wonder about if their child's got a lot of poo in the back passage is about enemas. But the problem is that enemas don't really teach children how to do a normal poo, and they often find that really distressing. And we want to avoid a cycle where children are needing regular enemas, so they're very rarely used in practice.
Okay. And you say that the medications are safe, which is reassuring. Are there any side effects?
Generally, no. They are safe when used in the right doses. I think, you know, although parents do worry about any medication given to their child longer than is needed, but as long as we make sure that children aren't, you know, on excessive amounts of laxatives, and in which case, you know, we would normally follow children up reasonably soon after the laxatives have been started to make sure that they're managing okay, they'll be free of side effects. We've had patients who've been on Senna, Movicol and all those medicines for 10 to 15 years without problems.
Right, okay. And with those children, is the aim to eventually get them off?
Always, when they're ready. I think, you know, for example, when children are undergoing processes such as toilet training, you wouldn't wean laxatives whilst that's happening. Also, you know, you're conscious of what the child is doing in terms of school and things like that, and shaping their own medications around what they need.
Yes, okay, so talking about school, how does constipation and laxatives and things fit into school?
So if we have children on laxatives, we normally let school know. It's so that the teachers know to take a positive approach to this. So there's a couple of levels, one of which is to say that children who are starting school may still occasionally have accidents, and school may need to be prepared to support them with their intimate care, and that is quite common. So about 10% of children may have accidents on starting school. And it's also important to say that the child should have access to a clean and separate toilet, which is which is legislated for under the Education Act of 1953. There should be a clean and separate toilet, not just the main toilet block, but a toilet maybe attached to the medical room or near the staff room that a child can access. And, you know, if a child does have regular accidents, it may be useful for them to have a bag with changes of clothing and things like that as the child aims to get clean and to understand what's happening. It's important the child has an active role in this, and parents have an active role in supporting them. But also, if school are able to give them, for example, a toilet pass so that they don't have to wait for break in order to go when they feel the need to go, if they just go at the time. Because children who hang on to poo, the bowel, when the poo is still inside the bowel is still absorbing water, so the poo gets a bit harder and a bit more difficult to pass the longer it's in. So helping children to leave class with the toilet pass without necessarily having to stick their hands up in class and say, please miss, can I go for a poo? Because no child really wants to do that, but have that way that a child can leave and their familiar teacher knows why they've left and trusts them to go to the loo is key in helping them get better.
And do you find that most schools are quite understanding with this?
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly, you know, the aim is to make sure that they don't miss days off school. There are some children who are, you know, when they're starting a course of Movicol, may need a few days off school whilst they're doing the initial clear out. And that's, you know, that's with the aim of trying to avoid the situation where children go into school and then they're off and then on and off, and so a defined period of time may help them with that.
Sort of, but about a week or something?
Yeah, probably about a week. But for those children who are occasionally having accidents, the other thing for school to know is that it's not viral gastroenteritis. If they have an accident in school, they don't then need 48 hours off school in order for any infectious process to, for example, work its way through. If a child's not got a temperature and is not vomiting, that's part of that. That's just their normal accident, and they, you know, should be able to get clean, get into a new set of clothes, and rejoin the normal school routine without delay.
Brilliant. You mentioned toilet training in the context of laxatives. Have you got any other tips for toilet training?
Other than make it fun, I think it's important to make sure that your child is old enough and verbally communicative enough to be able to tell you that they need to go to the loo. It's not just a case of, if you've got 2 weeks off work and your other half has got 2 weeks off work, then you then go, right, now we're going to train our child. But, you know, they should be ready and communicating. If you just swap the nappies for pants, they'll just soil in the pants just like they did their nappy. So it's about putting in a regime where they are kind of going to the toilet for 5 minutes after breakfast, lunch and dinner, plus also sitting on the, you know, for example, sitting on the potty, that it's fun, that it's engaging, and their rewards are instant. Now, you can choose your own rewards as you wish. I think for our son, we used chocolate buttons. It seemed to work beautifully for him. There are some children who quite like control, and so they can't control what they eat, they can't control where they go, but they can control when they poo, and they can use that to manipulate parents a little bit. So parents, watch out, that can be part of the problem. But, you know, trying to use ways of distraction and fun and positivity and rewarding children when they do put stuff in the toilet is definitely the way for improving these things.
We have talked about this. Most parents would want to know, will my child get better from this?
They will. And I think it's important that, you know, as the more the child is motivated to do it, the more the parents have the knowledge and patience and the desire to help, as well as the medical and education services being around them, that will definitely help. And the vast majority of children definitely get better. Early identification definitely helps children to recover early. So rather than coping with it for years and years and then seeking help, they will get better. The other thing I was just thinking, the other thing that's quite useful is to help children understand what's happening for them is look at the ERIC website, which can be useful for resources.
So it's eric.org.uk.
Yeah. And also keep an eye out for social stories that can help their child to understand.
So yes. Tell me about social stories.
I think the commonest one is I Want My Potty by Eric Ross, which is just a fantastic story of a princess that's been told by the Queen and King, or encouraged by the Queen and King, how to use a potty. And it's just a way to help them understand that using the potty is fun and normal and part of them being a bigger child, rather than sort of, you know, some children can regress and be slightly keen to stay in their infant years, and this is part of them moving on and progressing as a bigger child.
Great, thank you. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you so much, Caroline, and thank you for the invitation to chat about constipation.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Fontanelle, the first in our mini-series of podcasts for parents. I hope you found it useful and were able to take away some tips on how to overcome this very common but very treatable condition. And I hope you're reassured by Dr. Tai's message that in the vast majority of cases, this can be overcome. If you have enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review, but also please get in touch with me at fontanellepod@gmail.com and let me know what other topics you would find useful to hear about on the podcast. Until next time, from Fontanelle, goodbye.